Okay, so this week we're covering cognitive distortions, which does not directly come from DBT. It comes from CBT, which is cognitive behavior therapy. And I like to think of CBT as a, like, sibling therapy to DBT. A lot of very similar concepts, a lot of kind of same processes used, packaged a little bit differently, but also used for a lot of very similar diagnosis and a lot of similar clinical population. And so if you've ever done CBT with a therapist before, what you would recognize or remember most probably is the triangle with thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And one of the kind of core tenets is that we don't necessarily have complete control of our thoughts or our feelings, but we do have control of our behaviors. And so when we need things to change, we change the behaviors and we use that to help us regulate the thoughts and the feelings. So very similar to what we've been talking about the last three videos in regards to non-judgmental stance and observing and describing our thoughts, and also the meditation where we kind of engaged in the metaphor of our mind. We don't have 100% control of our thoughts, but we can observe when they're unhelpful and change them so that they cannot produce more negative emotions for our experience. So the packet I sent you the link for has like a whole bunch of really great ones for this. It's got like a short description for the top 10 most common cognitive distortions, a long description, the techniques that they use in CBT, like some emotions when they fit the facts. So this is just a really good packet I always share, and it's one of my favorite ones that like comes from outside of the DBT book. Distortions are any pattern of thinking that is unhelpful, and typically it's unhelpful because it increases the experience of negative emotions, just like we were talking about with judgmental stance in the last video of mindfulness house skills. There are lots and lots of different forms of them, but this packet covers the top 10, and there is some overlap between them, that some of them are fairly similar. What you'll probably recognize is that you relate to, like, 2 to 5 of them. Oh, yep, these are my key ones. And then the rest, like, oh yeah, maybe I occasionally do that. Or, oh yeah, like, in certain circumstances, this is my go-to one, but it's not nearly as problematic. And so there's a lot of information going over 10 different ones, but just kind of take it in and see what hits home. And if things don't hit home, you know, let it move on. Okay, so top 10 forms. First one is all or nothing thinking. You see things in black or white categories. If a situation falls short of perfect, you see it as a total failure. So this is very much like the discussion of judgmental stance. If I notice that I did something wrong and I immediately start labeling myself as stupid, I'm not giving myself space for change and I'm creating more negative emotion by like putting that label on myself. And so to combat all or nothing thinking, we do exactly what we did with our Venn diagram, with emotion, ration, and wise mind. That, like, if I'm all the way on one side, how do I incorporate the other side of the picture to move myself to a more balanced perspective? Okay. The second one is overgeneralization. You see a single negative event, such as a romantic rejection or a career reversal, as a never-ending pattern of defeat by using words such as always or never when you think about it. So always and never are two words we try to avoid in DBT because they're rarely correct, right? There's almost always exceptions to any rule. And so if we're using all or never words, we're in that all or nothing black and white space. And so we want to stay away from that things that are that final. So a good example of this is I was running late to an appointment a couple of weeks ago. And like that's one of my big anxiety stressors. And I remembered in the past, this is somewhere I had to drive, which, you know, we don't do as much of in COVID life. And in the past, how, like, I would amplify this up with overgeneralization. Oh, I always catch the worst traffic. I can't be prepared enough. And in this moment, I was just able to say, like, no, Jamie, you left the house with more than enough time to get here. And there was additional road work that cost you this. And this is not a reflection on you. And that it's okay to be late. But in the past, that overgeneralization would have led to me like spiraling into you're such a horrible person for not being able to correctly compute the amount of time. And so just being able to see, like, I don't have a black cloud over my head. Yes, maybe sometimes bad things happen and I can accept that. but it's not always. Number 3, mental filter. You pick out a single negative detail and dwell on it exclusively so that your vision of all reality becomes darkened, like a drop of ink that discolors a beaker of water. And the example the sheet gives is you give so many positive comments about your presentation at work, but one of them says something mildly critical and you obsess about this reaction. So as human beings, we're kind of fine-tuned to focus on the things that are bad. And maybe in the past that like had a true evolutionary perspective, right? Like the bad information helps me stay safe enough to survive. But here in current day, like bad information is usually like ego hits. And so we're really sensitive because most of us have trauma and harm, and when we get bad information, sometimes we absorb it and we focus on it and we just like spiral and build it and that's all we can focus on. And so when you notice that you're taking a piece of negative information and just building it up, the key is to go in the complete opposite direction, to check the facts. Was this really a reflection of my performance? Or was this one out of many perspectives and I'm choosing to focus on it and create negativity for myself? Number 4, discounting the positive, almost the exact same one. Number 5, jumping to conclusions. You interpret things negatively when there are no facts to support your conclusion. Two examples of this are mind reading. Without checking it out, you arbitrarily conclude that someone is reacting negatively to you. So how this pans out for people that grow up with somewhat ineffective emotional mothers is that we have learned to alter our behavior based on their mood in the moment. And so we're hypersensitive to what's going on with them so that we can know how we have to present ourselves to not be disliked by them in that moment. And while that can be an effective coping skill in that type of environment, when we take it into the real world, what we do is we imprint those unhealthy coping mechanisms that they had onto everybody we interact with. And we expect that we need to read and manage their emotions instead of just being able to be accurate and authentic with them. And so that's one way mind reading can kind of keep playing out in our older adult life. The other example is fortune telling. You predict things will turn out badly. Before a test, you tell yourself, I'm going to blow it. Like there's no reason to even try. And so then kind of creating that self-fulfilling prophecy. Okay, number 6 is magnification. You exaggerate the importance of your problems and shortcomings, or you minimize the importance of your desirable qualities. I had a teacher express this one by saying, this is when you can take any small thing, as little as like, I forgot to wash the dishes this morning, and get all the way up to I'm going to be homeless. And just that way that our brain can take us from one very little trigger and over time build it into something just a real big catastrophe. So the key is in that one, coping ahead. Could I handle the catastrophe, and is the catastrophe realistic? Am I building into facts that aren't there? Okay, number 7 is emotional reasoning. You assume that negative emotions reflect the way things really are. So this comes into like mood-dependent behavior. When you feel hopeless, you become hopeless. So instead of acknowledging that an emotion is just an experience that will pass, you become attached to it, and that is the entirety of your identity, even if it is this moment. And so recognizing when you are becoming overly attached to an emotional state and when you can let go of that and move into something more neutral. Again, right? Like we were talking about with non-judgmental stance last week. We're not trying to go from negative to positive. We're trying to go from negative to neutral. Number 8 is should statements. So we use should statements to help keep ourselves miserable. I'm not allowed to be happy right now because I should be doing this thing into my future. And so if I'm not going to put the effort into that, I'm not going to put the effort into anything that will make me okay. And that is kind of one of those like programming from childhood that we pick up and then we magnify and then we create our own hell. And so anytime you catch yourself saying the word should, recognize that you have a choice in that moment. You could be doing the thing you think you should be doing, and if you're not, it's okay because you have free will and that's what you've chosen. And giving yourself an emotional guilt trip about it is not going to motivate you. It's actually going to decrease the likelihood of you completing that behavior. Number 9, labeling. Labeling is the exact same thing as judgmental stance. And number 10 is personalization and blame. Personalization occurs when you hold yourself responsible for an event that isn't entirely under your control. The example, when a woman received a note that her child was having difficulties at school, she told herself, "This shows what a bad mother I am," instead of trying to pinpoint the cause of the problem so that she could be helpful to her child. So there may have been some instances in your childhood where you took in personalization for other stuff that was more systematic, more family-wide, but because you were this sensitive child and things had happened, like, you took on the blame for yourself. And so recognizing, like, yes, I have control and I impact many things in my environment, but not taking blame that is not belonging to us and allowing ourselves space to be human and recognizing when we make mistakes that that's just mistakes, but not being overly focused on, like, I am the cause of all the negative things that happen. Okay. So, like I said, check this out. There's so much more information in this packet. Such a good packet. And we can talk about these tomorrow, any of them that kind of resonate most with you. And we're just going to keep moving on with this idea of we're reprogramming your relationship to your thoughts. The thoughts are going to continue to happen, but we can be more mindful. We can observe them. And when we notice that they're creating negative emotions, we can change them efficiently to change your emotional state so that you feel like you have more control over your experience, so that you can create this life that is working for you.